Welcome to Built Different, a podcast by boots-on-the-ground workers who are built different and like to get site done.
We're here to listen, question the status quo, and continue to find better ways to build the world. All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Built Different podcast. I am joined today by two, not one, but two of my esteemed colleagues, Mr. Chris Jervy. I'll let you jump in and say hello.
Hi, everybody. It's Chris. I think you're starting to get to know us, right? I'm the guy that follows Matt.
Yeah. Perfect.
With the next question.
We've moved from esteemed colleague to a guy that follows Matt.
I'm perfect. Just the next question guy.
I'll switch it up next time. And then also our data scientist, Gayatri Shahane. Would you want to say hello real fast?
Hi, everybody. It's so great to be here. I'm Gayatri.
Awesome. We're going to be talking about, Chris, did we say something funny already?
Yeah, I'm just already enjoying this. Yeah, please carry on.
All right. So we're going to talk today about, we're going to talk about sustainability, something that we at Struction Site have, in a way, and I'm not sure if this will come up today, so maybe I won't get into it yet, been talking about since around 2019, and only recently have started to explore this journey of what role do we play in creating a more sustainable construction industry as well as world, and what does our data scientist here have to say about what we like? How do we put some numbers to that? How do we start to quantify it? And yeah, so let's dive in. I guess Gayatri, usually where we love to start here is just hearing a little bit about you. Where'd you go to school, and kind of how did your career sort of begin? What did the beginning of your career look like?
Yeah, so I went to Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for my master's degree in energy science, technology, and policy. I worked at the intersection of energy and data science. Before that, I was in India. I did my bachelor's there in mechanical engineering. And then I worked for a bit at an energy VC. I think around that time I met Matt and we talked a little bit about data at Struction Site. We did like a pilot project and I was the first data hire here. And it's been amazing 2 years. We spent 2 years in just, you know, diving deep into our data infrastructure, building out pipeline. And now we have like an amazing team of data scientists and data analysts.
Gayatri, tell me, so this is I'm really excited about this. Because I don't think any business in any industry can ignore the need for sustainability in their practice, whatever it might be. It's all pervasive. It's going to come up in every single industry. It's an obligation that we have to the people that come after us to find ways to do a better job managing our resources, not hogging up the whole dang thing for ourselves. The reason I moved to California when I was 25 or whatever was because I was really into sustainable construction. I got really interested in, you know, all sorts of different, not just like eco-friendly, for lack of a better term, materials, et cetera, but also really like unique and different models of building. So I was out building straw bale homes, and I built a straw bale church, school, some really cool stuff way back in the day. This is something that I'm pretty passionate about. I would love to know a little bit more about what it was. I mean, mechanical engineering to, you know, really getting into energy work is a bit of a jump. I want to talk a little bit about where that kind of jumped up in your heart. Like, where was there a place where you thought, this is something that I'm really passionate about? Because usually there's something personal, right? There's a sense of responsibility or something like that. So can you dig into that a little bit more? I feel like there's probably something there for you.
Oh yeah, for sure. So during my bachelor's in mechanical engineering, I started pivoting towards energy a lot. I did a couple of projects using just solar energy and converting seawater into desalinating it into drinkable water. So that was like one big project for me. And I just started getting into energy a lot, and that was like a clear pathway from there. So I couldn't work on anything else at that point. And that's why the jump to like Carnegie Mellon And I think these days you can't really do anything without data science. And so that's why, you know, energy mattered to data science, and here I am.
I think you were doing ESG before people were calling it ESG. Like, what was the name of the program? It's like Energy and Policy. What was the name?
Yeah, it was ESTP. So it's Energy Science, Technology and Policy. So it's a little bit of both. I mean, science, because you can't really go ahead without solid research. Technology is, again, data science and other technical stuff. And policy, because in this current scenario right now, we need policy and we need that push from the government to really invest in energy initiatives. So it's like a combination of everything.
I have a question for both of you guys, and also maybe anybody who happens to be listening. Are there any anybody out there? Is there anybody that went and studied mechanical engineering that is practicing mechanical engineering? We seem to have a lot of guests and folks that are interested in who studied mechanical engineering, but nobody that I know so far is actually practicing mechanical engineering. So anybody out there listening, I want you to hit us up on LinkedIn or whatever. And let us know if there are some mechanical engineers out there that studied. And there must be. I just haven't met one yet.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of a lot of my friends have moved away from it and went into like data, computer science, and, you know, the fancier stuff. But a lot of them have stayed there and they're working on like battery technology and, you know, just the good stuff and which powers things like Tesla. And I mean, without that, we can't, like, so mechanical engineering is still alive. I don't want to say it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my journey was more about realizing as a person who had studied mechanical engineering that I was never going to be the best engineer, and just coming to grips with that, and then shifting careers into sales in the early days, and so yeah, no, I think the really smart, really talented engineers stayed in engineering, and those of us that recognized we were not that moved into something else.
That's the situation that we're in.
yeah.
Hey, let's take a step back a little bit. I feel like we probably need to better define sustainability. I mean, what does that really mean?
So to put it very simply, sustainability means, you know, meeting our own needs without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their needs. The main goal of environmental sustainability is to avoid depletion and to preserve our resources. This is becoming increasingly important as we are pushing our ecosystems and pursuing higher and higher goals. And so we are at this tipping point, which I can say can trigger catastrophic consequences, but we've already started to see that, and not just in rising sea levels, but more frequent and intense droughts, storms, heat waves, and we now have like a California fire season, and we have started to see impacts already. Sustainability initiatives in particular, you know, tend to take evoke like a sharp response because the pushback is primarily based on the argument that change will be more expensive and harmful to business. But this doesn't have to be true.
I want to go back to, I mentioned earlier, 2019 for us, and then talk about kind of how you started on this path and the research you're doing and the data that you're looking at and analyzing here now. I guess to set the table, Chris, I think you were in the room for this. Sometime around 2019, we sat down to talk about what our purpose was as a business. And we had to we were doing this massive brainstorming session with a consultant that was basically sort of trying to guide us through this process of understanding more of what we were looking to do in the world and what we cared about. And I remember at the time, the word sustainability kept coming up. But it was very unclear to us what it didn't feel authentic for us to say that we're playing a role in that at that point. We were like, we as a company feel we want to have an impact here. And this is kind of like what gets us part of why we sort of wake up every day excited to do what we do. But the connection between sustainability and Structure Insight was really unclear. And so now it looks like we've begun to sort of peel back the layers of that onion and understand what our role is. And yeah, Gayatri, I'd love to kind of hear kind of how this journey started and how you started doing this research. And yeah, I'll let you take it away.
Yeah, sure. So this was one of the first analysis I did for Structure Insight in our pilot project. So I was fresh from the energy industry, wanted to apply my skills. And I was like, okay, looking at the data, what can we do with it? And one of the analysis that I did was, you know, how much carbon emissions are offset by travel saved by us. And now we've actually come full circle. We've built a strong data infrastructure to support our claims in that regard.
That's cool. It's interesting to me how much, you know, to kind of go back to this, it really has evolved for us, I think, very organically. I think we felt like early on, just to kind of come back to what Matt was saying before, is like, I think we felt like it's tangential. There's something there, but we didn't really know how to put our fingers on it. There was something about, you know, a commitment to the industry, to doing what's right, about getting people, you know, to work better, safer. I think, you know, we talk about pollutants, we talk about environmental quality, workplace safety and a better environment for the work to take place in. I think we knew that maybe wanting that was something, or that, you know, I don't know that we knew exactly how we were going to play a role. And I don't know, Matt, if it felt like this for you, but I know that having spoken with a ton of our customers, especially over the last 2 or 3 years, you know, when the pandemic hit and all of a sudden people were really looking for virtual access to their job sites, I don't know that this was like a target. It certainly wasn't something that I felt like we were looking to do, although apparently this research was sort of already in place. But it was interesting how much just the circumstances of the pandemic got people thinking a little bit more about, you know, how they maybe didn't have to go out to their job sites, how they could get more work done with, you know, with less frequent trips back and forth from an office to a, you know, or a trailer to a job site, or getting on a plane and flying somewhere that they didn't necessarily need to do because, you know, we were already documenting the current conditions of the job site for them, et cetera. And I feel like, you know, we sort of walked right into this. It was almost the perfect storm where all of a sudden we had something that we could measure and it made sense for us. Was there something in there that was true for you? I mean, was there something that started our ability to kind of better track that for you during that? Or is that just totally random? Does that make sense?
Can you elaborate on the question?
Yeah, so I'm just wondering, you know, like all of a sudden we had people that weren't going to the job site and we were all of a sudden starting to put things like hours traveled saved, you know, or hours saved in travel, you know, and it's like that wasn't necessarily like a sustainability initiative by Struction Site. It just happened to be something that we were measuring. But all of a sudden, you know, how do we measure sustainability? Well, to some degree, it's in, you know, CO2 emissions saved, which of course is going to happen when you aren't getting in your car to travel some more. And so I'm wondering, you know, was there actually a time where, you know, those two things actually started to come together, where I was like, actually, CO2 emissions is travel saved. And while our sustainability research was kind of coming at it from CO2 emissions saved, our customers were just using, you know, Struction Site more to minimize the travels that they were doing. And it just sort of came together. And all of a sudden, that was sort of that helped to understand, you know, what our role could be there. Does that make sense? I'm just trying to figure out, you know, it just seemed like all of a sudden everything sort of came together for us in a more meaningful way than it did in 2019 when we didn't really know how we might play in that space or make an effect there.
Yeah, totally. I agree with you. I mean, we started Structure Insight to solve a construction problem and to help the construction industry. And sustainability is sort of like a side effect and a side benefit that we discovered when we started looking at the data that, you know, when we also spoke with customers, that they're actually, this is real, they're actually saving time and they're not traveling to their job sites. This was a huge deal during COVID. We saw like a lot of spikes in views and a lot of travel saved by customers. So it was, I think, just timing and having that data ready to support our claims that, it did magically come together.
Maybe before we jump into any of the data and the findings, anything that you could sort of help set the table with regards to any recent reports or things that help frame your thinking for like what sustainability should look like or is currently looking like in construction?
On a high level, I mean, in this April itself, the IPCC, which is the Intergovernmental Panel for Climate Change, released its sixth assessment report, the AR6, and it just paints a very dire picture of our world in the future, and it's going to have enormous impacts on every nation and every industry. So even if it's not legislated, we need to start moving, or we need to move very heavily towards sustainability and those objectives. Well, that being said, construction is one of the worst offenders when it comes to pollution, CO2 emissions, and energy use. I can dive into like those exact numbers, but just holistically speaking, construction industry is a massive contributor to climate change and pollution.
Well, let's not wait. Let's dive in. Yeah, lay it on us. What's the situation today?
Let's do this. So currently we contribute about 36% of the final energy use globally, and 39% of energy and process related carbon dioxide emissions. So, and on top of these emissions, the industry accounts for about 50% of the landfill waste, and about 40% of polluted drinking water, and 23% of air pollution. So these numbers are not even single digits. They're so high. The 50% landfill use and 39% carbon dioxide emissions. And each phase of construction requires tremendous energy, and it emits greenhouse gases to the environment. Inside of those phases, transportation is also a big contributor in terms of energy impact and carbon emissions. Transportation, which supports construction. We use heavy machinery, and we all love our Ford F-150s and Rams and our V8s, which are about 40% more. They emit 40% more CO2 equivalent than like an average car, which say Honda. We will never drive that, but yeah, that's construction industry for you.
So I guess we're, you know, of course that those are massive numbers, by the way, first of all. 50, just to restate them, 50% landfill waste, 40% polluted drinking water, 23% air pollution. That's a lot more than I would have expected. Those are some pretty massive numbers. Go ahead, Chris.
But again, if you think about it, you know, we're tearing big things down and replacing them with other very big things. You know, we have large trucks because we have lots of large equipment. I mean, we need these things in some part. This isn't just a vanity project in our F-150s, right? It's that these are jobs that require big machines. And so I think, you know, the common response, and you touched on this a little earlier, Gayatri, is, you know, okay, but how are we going to do this stuff without those consequences happening as a result of needing those machines? Like, how do we continue to do the great work that we do as an industry, the sort of heavy resource consumption work that we do as an industry, you know, in a more sustainable way without hurting the business or the project? You know, is there a way to do that? I think is probably the common question here.
But definitely, I mean, there's no silver bullet, but this question can be answered better when we break down down into construction phases, which are the production phase, use phase, and finally the demolition phase. So if we look at the production phase first, one area of impact is the materials that we use to actually build it. So by opting for sustainable materials like HDPE, which is high density polyethylene pipes, concrete made from granulated blast furnace slag, which is like a waste product of the steel industry, and it can be upcycled, or bamboo floors, you know, contractors not only reduce the lifetime cost of a building, but they can also make it more valuable by increasing the value of the property. contractors not only reduce the lifetime cost of the building, but also make it more valuable by substantially increasing the resale value of the property. So I think the gist of that is upcycling materials, using better materials to decrease the lifetime cost of a building. I mean, it might be slightly expensive right now, but the lifetime cost decreases significantly. And next, when it comes to the use phase, more LEED certified buildings can reduce the stress on the environment. So these structures are more energy and resource efficient. They generate less waste and lower the use of energy, water, and other resources. LEED certification is available for nearly all buildings, and there are numerous sources of funding available on a national, state, as well as local levels. For example, there are like federal tax credits for energy efficiency. There's a database of state incentives for renewable energy. So by using these, we can significantly reduce the impact on environment in the use phase. Lastly comes the demolition phase, and demolitions are inevitable in construction, and dust seems to come with the territory. But a targeted water-based dust suppression system is one possibility to reduce it. It's pretty simple to explain it. It's the structure being torn down is kept wet before and during and after the demolition process, and boom, like no dust.
Is dust? Can I ask you a question on that? Is dust? I didn't realize this was like an actual issue. What is the impact of dust from a demolition, from a sustainability perspective? Is the dust the issue? I would have figured like the carbon from, you know, like you, like materials. I mean, like what the material, maybe you would call it waste. If it's been used, maybe it's not completely waste, but like, what's the issue with the dust? Yeah, I'm curious.
I can try to answer that. There's, like Chris said, there's a lot of crap and dust particles, like lung cancer, like, you know, just problems in respiratory systems and affects us birds, like all animals, and air pollution.
Gotta keep that stuff down.
Exactly. So okay, so we've got production phase, use phase, demolition phase. I'm thinking of a couple things here that just remind me to kind of tie this back to like, what role do we play here? Chris, maybe you've heard this a few times, right? We hear a lot about rework, and there's if there's a ton of material waste during, you know, this phase of, you know, the use or the production phase of construction, I think that tends to be where we play more. I guess I don't know how we would ever quantify this, right? We hear a lot about not chipping out concrete because you know what's inside of it, and not putting a bunch of holes and wasting a bunch of drywall and sheetrock because you know what's behind it. That's just like, I think it's interesting to think about how much of the, I do wonder what percent of the waste comes from, like, is there a breakdown of production phase, use phase, demolition phase, as far as like how much they contribute, each of them, to the sort of like overall impact of construction?
When you do like a life cycle analysis of a building, you can understand how much each of those phases contribute to energy impact, water impact, or carbon dioxide emission equivalent. I don't have those numbers right now, but there's definitely, we can break that down.
Let's talk about technology, because I want to talk. Obviously, you know, there are a lot of people doing some great work. You know, green builders, you know, LEED certification obviously isn't brand new. You know, there's a lot of stuff to, you know, to sort of mitigate, you know, the impact that's been happening for a long time. But we are ultimately technology vendors, and we are still looking for ways that we specifically can impact and measure against some of the impact that we make. Tell us how technology actually can we actually make an impact? Is that real for us?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the keys to unlocking long-term sustainability will most likely come from this new wave of construction tech companies. And just to break it down as well, we have project management and production tracking softwares help keep teams on task and enable projects run smoothly. But some side benefits have emerged with the significant sustainability implications. And this has been the case with StructionSite. StructionSite was, like we said before, was not designed to lower carbon dioxide emissions, but rather to solve day-to-day issues that teams are experiencing on the ground. We address business problems in a way that increases productivity, freeing up resources by automating manual processes while lowering overall costs. We started tracking multiple data points to understand how our products have impacted a job to prove a value. And the results have surprised us.
Yeah, tell us more. What were they?
Yeah, exactly. What did you guys find?
So the first one is like reducing visits to job site, and that's a big one. So one of StructionSite's capabilities is to allow users to create a 3D view of their job sites as they capture photos. So viewing or accessing this 3D model on their laptop or phone saves project managers and team leaders multiple trips to their job sites. And at times, these job sites are 50 miles, 200 miles away from where the offices are. And that those are the trips that we save. And over the last year, StructionSite has saved organizations and workers almost 16 million driving miles by reducing the need to go back and forth to different sites. And by lowering the number of visits on site, StructionSite has offset 59,000 tons of carbon dioxide emission tailpipe emissions, which is equivalent to taking 12,000 cars off the road for a year. And we are just one company. So imagine like this wave of new construction tech just going out there and reducing carbon emissions and having sustainability impacts.
Just to sidetrack you for a second. How are we measuring that? Like I don't want to necessarily, if we're going to get into methodology a little bit later, but like those are big numbers, probably surprisingly big numbers. I think sometimes our customers, when they see that in their, you know, analytics dashboard are shocked and maybe unbelievable. Maybe they're incredulous. I'd love to know like a little bit more about like how we're actually doing that. Like, how do we get those numbers? They're pretty powerful.
Yeah. They are powerful and they seem pretty big, but we are actually taking a very conservative approach of measuring them. So the value prop is when a customer or project leader views the site from somewhere else, which is not his project, that's the trip that they save, right? And those are the miles that we calculate. But the conservative portion of it is that if they are viewing from the same city as the and the project is in the same city, we don't even calculate that because we consider travel is not needed. If the distance between the viewing and the project is more than 150 miles, then it's considered that they need a flight because they won't drive that much. And if they check every day from that far, it's not that we'll calculate that 150 miles for every day. It's each month. So very conservative again there. If it's more than 150 miles, we only consider that they will travel once a month. And if it's less than 150 miles away, we use Google Maps and distance calculators to calculate that distance and calculate those miles basically.
What about anybody that walks to work?
So they'll be in the same city, right? So if it's if they're in the same city, then it's, yeah, we're not calculating that.
So we've obviously made some assumptions that, I mean, we have to, right? We're not going to track every single thing. One of the things as our the customer success guy in this call, I'd love to like validate some of that. I assume maybe we've had conversations with customers to help validate some of this stuff, but I'm going to just invite publicly anybody that's listening to this podcast that would love to like join this. Like, I think it'd be really cool to keep sort of validating some of those assumptions. This is really, again, really powerful. These numbers are striking, right? And so I think it'd be cool to, I really want our customers to feel like there's buy-in. I want them to buy into what those numbers actually are. And I don't think we're afraid to, Wizard of Oz this thing, pull the curtain back and, show some folks what the assumptions are, et cetera. The methodology is there, but obviously it's probably always got to get tweaked a little bit. So anyway, I don't want to derail this, but I just feel like it's really cool. And I don't want people to be like, call BS on it, right? Like there's real science behind this, people. We have a real data scientist on the call right now.
Yes,
right,
please.
All right, sorry. I know there are other things.
Please come and challenge our data team to a carbon emissions evaluation. I think you bring up an interesting point. We have a lot of customers who also care deeply about sustainability as builders, right? We're like, this isn't any one part of the ecosystem that has this initiative. It's I think the point is to get everybody to have this as an initiative and try to understand what role you play in it, as well as then sort of once you understand that role, really, how do you max it out? And so actually, I agree with you, Chris. I think it would be great to hear from customers who have their own initiatives on what they're trying to do. And we know, you and I both know based on some of our conversations we had last fall, that a lot of the executives at these large contractors are looking for new, different, better, more efficient ways of doing business that are both more attractive for the employees that come work there and more sustainable as well. It's got to be both. So,
I mean, there's a real like petrol savings cost here for people that are interested in trying to figure out how to, I'm using the cool way to say that there, you can save gas by not traveling so much. there's some real ways that we can win here just by thinking through the process. Okay, we could go off in this tangent forever, and I think we might. This may end up being a 4-hour long podcast because I'm extremely interested in this stuff. But there are actually a couple other ways that like Struction Site, I think is actually making a difference. I don't want to lose that thread. I want to finish that off. So can you keep going there, Gayatri?
Yeah, to add to a previous point, I mean, we can update our models to include petrol gas savings, looking at the gas prices here in California. And I think looking at what's happening outside with COVID, with gas prices, having the ability to, just view your job site from home or from your home office is so valuable, I feel.
Yeah.
So one of the things I brought up earlier, which maybe you can touch on here, is rework, right? So we know that a big part of waste is rework, and which it's also sort of related to inappropriate allocation of resources. We have people in the wrong area. We have materials in the wrong area. We installed the wrong thing. I'd love to hear anything that you could share with us on that.
Absolutely. So coming back to my previous point of where the impact is, another area of impact we're seeing is with like production tracking, right? And there's like a lot of inaccuracies when it comes to production rate tracking. And around 30% of the money in the industry is lost from material waste associated with waiting time, material rework, opening up walls and through other, and just other inefficiencies. What Struction Site also provides is production rate tracking data. We take accurate real time as well as historical production rate data, which helps us to predict what is the future production rate going to be, what's the end date going to be on a certain task, and that helps costly schedule delays.
It's related to what I was saying. So there's the production tracking piece, there's the rework, there's the waste, and then there's this other aspect of, sustainability is also, like we're trying to sort of build this better future together. Like there's this quality of life piece, right? Where yes, we are trying to reduce wastes in the form of rework and travel that does not need to happen, But have you guys given any thought to, on your guys' team, the data team, given any thought to sort of the quality of life impact and like how we might measure that in the future as well?
We have actually, and we have numbers to support that, where from all the driving miles saved, people are saving about 3 million travel hours. And that's just from 2021 up till now. And that not only frees up time for people to focus on what they love, but also removes the dull and manual tasks. And that can be done through Structure Inside. This gives them the opportunity to leverage like their unique human problem-solving skills and focus on what they love instead of being stuck in traffic, paying heavily for gas, and wasting that time.
You mean people don't want to pay $7 a gallon for gas?
or keep coming home at midnight? Yeah, I mean, this is where I feel like technology, for me at least, in my 12 years in contact, has always been about, you know, how do we best serve the customer? Okay, let's get people to work smarter, not harder. Let's cut those hours down. Let's see if we can get some, you know, efficiency gain in this stuff. And it is very clear to me that we've got an impact there. Okay, we're running a little long here, and we Matt, this is kind of your gig. So let's wrap this baby up. Ask your question, dude. Ask your final question. Come on.
Yeah.
I know you love this.
Yeah,
one.
Look, this is unique, right? Because we're interviewing somebody on our own team here, and so like I'm even more curious than I probably should be to understand the answer to this question. You know? So I always like to ask. What is it that you and or maybe your team are doing different, right? We're always talking about, this is the Built Different podcast. We always want to give folks an opportunity to talk about how they or their teams are different or are doing something different. And we'd love to wrap up with that.
Oh, wow. That's a good question.
It's the key question of this entire podcast.
Yeah. I think with our team, it rests on two things, right? So we are a data team in the construction industry. And I think we at Structure Inside would always like to say industry first, like we come from the industry. And that percolates in our team as well. So our CDO, our Chief Data Officer, Philip, he comes from the industry and gets that customer first, the construction industry understanding. And that percolates through our team. And when that marries to amazing, intelligent data people, we provide great results. So I think that's our secret sauce there.
I just love that we have a secret sauce.
I love it.
That's exciting.
And the shout out to Philip. Yeah, no, that's awesome. I love that. And we'll wrap up by saying, Gayatri, thank you very much for spending a little bit of time with us and bringing us into your world in data a little bit here and just kind of letting us know how you guys are quantifying the impact that we're having here, as well as just helping us be more thoughtful about how we might be better in the future. So I want to say thanks for the work you guys are doing. You're doing great stuff. I appreciate all of it, and look forward to seeing you guys at the office, the virtual one.
Yes, it was great to be here. Thank you for having me, and I want to say I'm really excited about the future and how the advent of construction tech is honestly improving the narrative that it's the most polluting industry. Sorry, not populating. Yeah, polluting industry.
Hey, we're not just a cool, shiny product. You know, we got some smart people here. Boom.
All right, you guys. We will see you all next week for the next episode of the Built Different podcast. Take care.
Bye.
Built Different is brought to you by Structure Inside. To find out more about us, head to structureinside.com.
Make sure to search for Built Different in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. Click follow so you don't miss out on any future episodes.
On behalf of everyone here at Structure Inside, thanks for listening.